From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Crystal Room is proud to present the club debut of America's newest recording stars, The Dreams.
Man has his own special dream, and your dream's just about to come true. Life's not as bad as it may seem if you open your eyes to what's in front of you. We are dream girls, boys, we'll make it happy. Yeah, we are dream girls, boys, we'll always care. We are dream girls, dream girls.
Dream Girls was a big hit on Broadway. It was nominated for 13 Tony Awards and won 6. Predictions are the new film version will win a slew of awards as well. Its all-star cast includes Beyoncé Knowles, Jennifer Hudson, Eddie Murphy, and Jamie Foxx, and its director is Bill Condon, already an Academy Award winner himself. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show to discuss what was involved in bringing the musical to the screen. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How familiar were you with the show before you began working on this project?
Very. I had seen it on opening night, actually, with a group of friends sitting in the back row. I was blown away by it and then went back to see it many, many times, so I knew it very well.
And what in particular appealed to you about it?
Well, you know, I think there's so many things. First of all, on stage, it was the most brilliant, bit of electric staging that I ever seen by Michael Bennett. And I thought it had a great score. It was almost entirely sung through and really kind of brilliantly worked out story. You know, one thing it did, there's always an inherent problem in backstage musicals in that the first act is inevitably, you know, more exciting because it charts the rise of a star or a group or something like that. And the second act is the price they pay in the decline. But because it split its protagonists into two, Effie's decline is in the first act, and then she rises in the second act. So they actually brought some added kind of emotion to second acts, which tend to be, sort of pale compared to first acts.
You've been on the show before to talk about Gods and Monsters, which was about James Whale, the movie director, which you wrote and directed. Also Kinsey, which you wrote and directed. But before Kinsey, hadn't you already written the screenplay for Chicago? Was that an aberration, or have you always wanted to do movie musicals?
I've always wanted to do them, and unfortunately, my period in the movies has kind of coincided with the decline of the movie musical. So when Chicago came around and I heard there was renewed interest, I really went after that. And I actually think of that as my university education in musicals. You know, I learned so much working with Rob Marshall that I was eager to then apply to Dreamgirls.
You learned from working with him on Chicago?
Yes.
Now, there haven't been a lot of movie musicals over the last 20 years. Is that one of the reasons that it's taken Dreamgirls so long to get to the screen? It was a big hit in the early 80s.
It was, yeah. No, I think that is part of it. I think there were a few aborted attempts. And I also think Michael Bennett died in 1987, you know, and David Geffen, who was one of the producers of the original production, sort of felt that he was the only one left to protect the legacy of the show. And he felt that other movies, you know, when they don't work, they tend to tarnish the reputation of the show that they're based on. So he's the one more than anybody who has kind of said no many times over the years, and then finally kind of his instinct told him that this was the right time to do it.
Well, how did you convince David Geffen to let you direct it?
Well, it was right after Chicago opened, and I went up there with Larry Mark, the producer, and just very quickly laid out an approach. And kind of the reason for making a film, you know, you just can't do it because you're a fan of the show. You know, I thought, for one thing, the distance of 25 years gives you a chance in a movie, especially to set the story in a larger historical context. On stage, it opened in the early 80s, just a few years after the events in which it was depicting. But now you really could see that something that really has reached its fruition now, where black culture is right at the heart of music and, in a way, movies. You know, to see how where that started in the 60s and how difficult it was to make that breakthrough, it just felt, now seemed a proper time. Also, you know, the idea of paradoxically, and this is something I learned from Chicago, I think movies become more cinematic by staying true to their theatrical roots. You know, often I think movies, just because they can open up, you know, bring you to places that you can't go on a stage. But my feeling is, you know, Eddie Murphy's character, James Thunder Early, we don't want to see what his house looks like. You know, he lives on a stage, you know, or on a bus on making his way to the next stage. So it just felt, you know, I think some of those ideas started to get David interested, and he suggests I have a go at it.
Well, actually, a lot of the film takes place on stages or backstage.
Yes.
Now, but you mentioned the two acts, and this is conventional wisdom about movies having three acts.
Yes.
So what happens there? Forget about the opening up aspect where you can go out in the streets and do all of that other stuff. How do you restructure something like this, or do you simply ignore the traditional movie structure?
Yeah, I tend to ignore that structure anyway. You know, I'm not sure I even understand it. I don't kind of think in those terms, you know. But certainly the second act did need, I found, Effie's story is strong there, although, you know.
Well, you should explain who Effie is. Effie is the original singer with the group who gets pushed aside. This is very much like what happened with the Supremes, and
yes,
winds up being a backup singer. And the Diana Ross-type character, Dina, winds up replacing her as the lead singer with the Dreams.
Correct. And then Effie finally gets thrown out of the group. And in the second act, she, in the 1970s, she slowly climbs her way back, basically by staying true to who she is, by finding her own voice. And that's something that we kind of accentuated in the movie. Sharon Davis, the costume designer, had this great idea that when Effie finally gets a gig at a club, that instead of getting all glitzy again, that she go Afrocentric, kind of like Aretha in that period, you know, that it's all about sort of staying real and not chasing the big success, but having a real success, you know. But I did find that in terms of the structure, the second act did need a lot more to happen. So that, you know, for example, on stage, Effie, there's one line where she refers to her daughter, but that's the major relationship of her life in the second act. So we see an awful lot more of that. You know, I don't want to give anything away, but different things happen to James Thunder Early and to Dina Jones in the second act. So, yes, it probably was, you know, structured more along movie lines, you know, as you get into the second and third act.
And you even created new songs, even though the Broadway show, as you said, was almost an opera. There was very little talk. You still created new songs.
Yeah, well, you know why? There are two kind of songs in Dreamgirls. There are the performance songs, and then there are the book songs. By book songs, I mean songs that happen in reality, where people just break out into song. And we all know that performance songs work very well in movies, because movies are a very realistic medium. People believe that people are on a stage or in a recording studio. But when you have people breaking out into song, and especially in Dreamgirls, breaking out into sung dialogue, that can be a little tougher for audiences who haven't grown up with that convention to embrace. So I decided to do it more sparingly in the movie. For example, Effie, when she falls in love with Curtis on stage, she sings, "Curtis, when I like a man's eyes, it's very serious." He turns to her and sings, "We'll talk about my eyes tonight." In the movie, that becomes a new performance song, "Love You, I Do," which has the same emotion, but also works in a more realistic way. It's a song that CeCe has written for her so that she can step forward and be, you know, have a solo act in the show.
My guest is Bill Condon, who is the screenwriter and director of Dreamgirls, now in theaters all over. Gossip columnists have suggested that you had to struggle to get Jennifer Hudson cast as Effie. Had you seen her on American Idol?
I had seen her on that, yes, definitely.
So how do you handle someone like her? Well, first of all, was it difficult to get her?
It wasn't difficult to get her. It was difficult to decide on who should play Effie. By that, I mean, you know, it was a six-month process. We had an open-door policy. Basically, anyone who woke up in the morning, looked in the mirror and said, "I could be Effie," was invited in to prove it, you know, so that we did open calls around the country. And there were almost 800 women who were put on tape for this. So that just took a long time. But finally, it came down to a handful that we did screen tests of, and Jennifer emerged as the obvious kind of choice.
Now, how do you handle someone like Jennifer Hudson, who may not have the same technique, the same vocabulary, the same training as other actors?
Yeah. Well, I think in general, when you're directing, that's always part of the fun of it, that you have to sort of be sensitive to the needs of any specific actor. I mean, you take two veterans, you know, there's Eddie Murphy and Anika Noni Rose. Anika's a great actress from the stage who loves to rehearse, and Eddie is, you know, a great film star who is allergic to rehearsal. So, and they've got all of their scenes together. So you somehow work out a balance of making each one of them feel as comfortable as possible. And it was the same with Jennifer. Jennifer, more than anything, as you say, she'd never even been on a film set before. So she needed more attention, but she craved it, and she responded so well to it. I'll give you a great example. And then I'm telling you, when the big song that ends the first act, the first time she did it, she cried. You know, and I sort of point out that basic thing, which is that it's, you know, we should be moving the audience to tears, not, you know, not crying ourselves, and that Effie is feeling a lot of things at that moment, but you know, self-pity is probably not one of them. That's all it took. We then proceeded to shoot that number over 4 days. We did over 60 setups, and in each one, those her eyes were moist, those tears were about to come, but she kept them in. That's an example of something. It's just someone with a natural technique and a huge natural talent.
Well, how different did you want her interpretations to be from Jennifer Holliday's?
You know, it wasn't even a question of being different. It was a question of being Jennifer, of finding it within herself, you know. And I think by virtue of that, we knew it would be different. Nobody stands behind me in my awe of Jennifer Holliday. I mean, that was an amazing performance, one of the best I've ever seen. So, you know, there was never a question of trying to match it. You know, Jennifer Holliday is sui generis, but so is Jennifer Hudson, you know?
Well, you said that Eddie Murphy doesn't like to rehearse, but I think everyone was surprised by just how great his performance is.
Yeah.
I was surprised when I saw that he had done his own singing. I guess I'd forgotten that's how he began.
I know, yeah. And he's had a recording studio at home. It's something he spends a lot of his time on.
So did you think of him from the start?
Yes, I did. He was the first person I mentioned to David Geffen when the script got delivered. He and Jamie Foxx is the two first people I wanted to go after.
How close did you feel you had to stay to the Motown story, the real Motown story?
Not. I mean, I think that was, you know, having done a few biopics recently, I found this kind of liberating because it was already well established in the world that Dreamgirls is, you know, a fictional story inspired by the Motown story. So that lets you kind of take the characters where you want them to go, you know, instead of being stuck with kind of what happened in reality. So I didn't feel that I had to stay close.
What distinguishes your approach to staging a musical number from a choreographer like Stanley Donen, let's say?
Well, it's interesting because those 50s musicals are the ones that I really refer to more than any others, certainly there's a whole sequence that is very similar to Donen's Funny Face. You know,
on the other hand, Motown had their own in-house choreographers to get their acts to do these fancy dance numbers.
That's right, Charlie Atkins. That's right, absolutely. But you know, I do think the Dreamgirls, oddly enough, directed and staged and choreographed by Michael Bennett, co-choreographed by Michael Peters on stage, has never been a dance musical. The dance sort of happened in the staging, and I sort of feel the same way here too. There's a lot of dance, but not compared to other movies, certainly not compared to Chicago even, and it's more about the motion of the story and the camera becoming as kind of kinetic as you know, the actual dancers.
So, before you go, can you tell us the truth? Was there or is there any friction between Jennifer Hudson and Beyoncé Knowles?
Disappointingly, no. I have to say,
I knew you were going to say that, even if there was.
No, but I got to tell you, you know, you talk about Jennifer. all of this was new to her, but dancing especially is something that doesn't, she'll be the first one to tell you, doesn't come naturally to her. So here we are at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're shooting Step Into the Bad Side, and we have to leave the theater, and we've been there for 16 hours, and we're shooting the thing that's on the poster, basically, those three girls stepping into the light, and Jennifer just cannot get it started on the right foot. And Beyonce, exhausted, decides to take it upon herself. She's going to not only perform, but count out the steps for Jennifer. And that's the kind of thing that happened over and over again. I think they really did become very close.
Dreamgirls has been given 5 Golden Globe nominations, Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Beyonce Knowles for Best Performance by an Actress in a Musical or a Comedy. Jennifer Hudson, Best Performance in a Supporting Role, Musical or Comedy. Eddie Murphy, Best Performance in a Supporting Role. And also the Best Original Song, Listen. So you must be very pleased.
Yes, it's very nice.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us again, Bill Condon, who both wrote the script for and directed the film version of Dreamgirls.
Thank you, Larry.
And I am telling you, I'm not going. You're the best man I'll ever know. There's no way I can ever go. No, no, there's no way. No, 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 no way. I'm living without you. I'm not living without you. I don't wanna be free.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.